This hour of the Jason Rancho brought to you by You Build It. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
The stepson of a former Democratic state lawmaker is charged with assaulting a police officer and planning sophisticated attacks against police. Now, the video of the assault, which has gone viral, shows an officer getting hit in the head by a man running up with an aluminum bat and taking a very, very vicious swing. It hit him in the head. He was wearing a helmet, the officer, thank God. Had he not been, he'd be dead. But because of those actions, Jacob Greenberg, 19 years old, is now charged with assault in the first degree. First degree. Which means there was intent to do serious bodily harm or kill the person. That's how serious assault in the first degree is. But also attempted arson in the first degree and reckless burning in the first degree, which was a charge from an earlier case. Now, his alleged accomplice has been identified as Danielle McMillan. She's been charged with attempted arson. She's got a little bit of a criminal history, includes assault in the fourth degree and reckless driving. It turns out that she is also, and I think this is shocking, number one, she looks like she's 40. I don't think she actually is. I think she's a little bit younger than that. She was a real estate agent with Windermere out of the Woodinville office. But according to a statement they put out, we were made aware that Danielle McMillan was arrested on charges of attempted arson on the Seattle Police Department's East Precinct. Due to the alarming nature of the charges, Danielle, who's been a broker with Windermere since July 2019, was released from the office in Woodinville where she was licensed. So she's not doing so well right now. Turns out that when you try to hurt police officers, when you use Molotov cocktails, in this case she's accused of it, it doesn't pay. But let's talk about Jacob Greenberg. Because he's the one who's being charged with the most serious of offenses. He's the stepson of former Democratic Representative Laura Ruderman, based out of Kirkland. Now, at the time where he was simply accused of potentially setting some of these fires outside of the East Precinct, his mother decided to use her position as a former lawmaker to actually get him some time off.
He is basically a good kid training student. I serve the state in the legislature, and we will make sure that he follows all of the conditions.
He's basically a good kid, straight A student. If even a small portion of these allegations against Greenberg are true, he is not a good kid at all. Now, according to these charging documents, which you can see online at ktth.com, they say Greenberg and McMillan, quote, spent their time this fall plotting various assaults and firebombings on police officers. It says that the conversations between the two showed, quote, a high degree of sophistication in planning for their attacks, identifying targets, itemizing the needs for set numbers of Molotov cocktails, calculating expected loss for failed bombs, and where to obtain supplies. In fact, according to the text messages between them, they had discussed whether or not they would get tattoos of Molotov cocktails to memorialize the fact that they allegedly used them against the East Precinct. They showed articles to each other of the bat to the head assault against the cop and said that they were very proud of Greenberg for the assault against the officers. They even communicated ways to, quote, destroy evidence of their attack plans. They did not destroy all the records of their attack plans, including the text messages that are very, very, very damning. All of this evidence that was compiled by the police was done over the period of a few weeks. It started on September 1st, where a group of about 100 or so Black Bloc agitators met at Cale Anderson Park. This park has been long used as a staging ground for these assaults against the East Precinct. earlier in that day, Greenberg had texted a friend, "I want to get some serious stuff going tonight," the friend said. "Like some real bleep, you know?" Then the friend said, "Hey, what do we need for the cocktails?" Greenberg replied, "Gas, mid-sized bottle, wick, rag." Now, after they did some marching around like they normally do, Greenberg, McMillan, and a third suspect allegedly huddled behind an umbrella, which is a common tactic to block the police officers in any surveillance videos from seeing the kind of illegal action that they're up to. In this case, it was so that they can light Molotov cocktails. One was thrown by McMillan, didn't work. Second one apparently was thrown by Greenberg, it did. On September 23rd, this is the night where there was the bat to the head incident against the cops. On September 26th, the agitators again gathered outside of the East Precinct. And this was where he was caught, Greenberg, allegedly trying to set fires and create a larger fire from some of the items that were burning. Now, there's a lot of evidence. It's important to understand because at the time of the first charge a couple weeks ago, their attorney, Jason Lance, not Rance, but Jason Lance, said this.
"But let's remember that what the police think they have is that in this chaotic situation with dozens, hundreds of people that had very generic looking clothing, that doesn't mean that they got the right person. They made a snap judgment."
He's right. It doesn't mean that for certain, because a lot of folks were wearing the exact same clothing. The problem with Greenberg, as alleged in these documents, he was wearing some very distinct clothing, including distinct pants, a full face respirator mask with white round filters, a Nikon camera, a pair of branded gloves, and other items that he wore, allegedly, to every one of those events. It was all caught on video surveillance. They executed a search warrant at his parents' home where he lives, and they found two bats, including an aluminum one that they suspect is the same one used to assault the police officer. 2 days later, detective obtained a warrant to search his car, where they found a helmet that they also say tie him to the events outside of the East Precinct. Oh, and then there's the text messages, like when Greenberg on September 2nd said, "How many Molotovs are you thinking we should have by Labor Day? Because we shouldn't overuse our resources. You dig?" Another one, he writes, "Oh, I was also part of the youth jail fires. Hell yeah, dude. That's bleeping awesome. I was the one who Molotoved the East Precinct, and other than that, I've broken windows with other people." Seems kind of damning. That whole being proud of hitting the cop in the head part. In fact, he said, "I'm so pissed at the cops, I bleep went off on them tonight. I'm proud too, hee hee. Wish he didn't have a helmet on, LOL. Another notable quote, "And can we like please slit every SPD throat? I want the whole damn system to just burn the bleep down. By the way, I really like fire." Sounds like a good kid. Definitely no evidence against him. I'm siding with the attorney. That's not sarcasm. I'm siding with the attorney.
You are the attorney.
That's my fake name. If you want to read all of the damning details on the allegations against Jacob Greenberg, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link. Text R-A-N-T-Z to 1-800-465-8770. We come back, Kim Wyman stops by. Find me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRants. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
So someone on 4chan is claiming they exploited a bug in the Washington voter website where they can actually cancel and even change someone's vote. It's a claim that a lot of people had messaged me about over this past weekend. But is there any truth to it? Let's turn to the person who actually might know. Secretary of State Kim Wyman joins me now. Welcome back to the show, Secretary Wyman.
Oh, thanks, Jason. It's great to be on.
Is this true?
No, it is not true. The feature on the VoteWAP portal that allows people to be able to get to their ballot and and essentially access it and print it to make a replacement ballot is really designed for our military and overseas voters and voters living with disabilities. This feature allows someone, for example, who needs accessibility to voting to be able to use their own assistive technology to mark their ballot and print it off at home and send it back to election officials. So we can't have any kind of restrictive security measure like your driver's license issue date and your driver's license number, which we do have on the features that would allow someone to change the address of a voter, for example. So we do that because the very voters I was talking about, those with living with disabilities or overseas military voters, may not have a driver's license in Washington State. So it was a security decision we made when we brought the system up. It's not a bug. It's not a security flaw. You do need to have the voter's name and date of birth to download a ballot. And all that will simply do is it will just hold or suspend your ballot that that you've been issued by the county election office. And we're just trying to make sure that there's only one ballot that's actually active and live in an election, so that only one ballot gets counted.
So, okay, let's go through this in a way that some of the folks claim is the bug in the system, and then tell me where we're wrong. So okay. I got my ballot. I mailed it yesterday. Put it in the mailbox yesterday. Right now, I can go online and look up my name and my birthday, and it has all of that information where it allows me to either update my name or address or just say, this is not me. What's to stop, if I did not send in my ballot first, someone to go in there and change the system and even get a replacement ballot sent to a new address?
Well, you can't get to the address feature without having your driver's license number and your issue date. So the person would have to not only know what your driver's license number is, but they would have to know what issue date was printed on the front of that to get to the point where you could change an address or change any information in the voter registration, in your voter registration record.
So there you have it. It seems then pretty clear. Then as you're looking at this supposed bug, what's missing from it? What are they not telling people?
Really, what they're saying is that they could go in and they could download your ballot. You know, so if you go in and view the online ballot on your VoteWash portal, once you do that, it's going to place a hold on your paper ballot that King County Elections sent you. So it's going to place a hold. But when your ballot, Jason, arrives at the election office in the next day or two and they start to process it and check your signature, that hold's going to appear. And the first thing they're going to do is check and see if an electronic ballot had been printed and returned. If it hasn't, then they will go ahead and they'll just have to take an extra couple steps and then they'll be able to accept the paper ballot that you voted in. Returned and give you credit for voting and move forward.
What if the reprinted ballot is submitted before mine? What if I do my voting on my paper ballot at the very, very last minute and someone else had gone behind the scenes and created that other ballot and sent it in?
The first thing that would happen is we would do a signature check on that return envelope, and my guess is the signature wouldn't match. So if it doesn't match, we would send a letter to you saying, gosh, your signature doesn't match on your form that was returned with your ballot, Jason, and then that would be your cue to say, wait a second, I haven't voted yet. So we could then pull that fraudulent ballot aside, and we could turn that over to law enforcement and realize that that person has gone online electronically and has left a footprint that people can investigate, law enforcement can investigate, but we can do an investigation, and that would be committing a felony if someone votes your ballot and it's not you. So that's a Class C felony in Washington State, which has a fine of up to $10,000 and up to 5 years in prison. And we do take that seriously, and we would prosecute anyone that did that.
So here's where I think there is a valid case to be made for potential for concern. Mm-hmm. When someone is successful in breaking the law and voting illegally, if they're successful, it means you guys didn't find out. So let's say you've got someone who just doesn't vote, doesn't pay attention whatsoever, and you know about that. Or you just go ahead and go online and, you know, roll the dice. And if this is some kind of sophisticated process, they're just doing this to a whole bunch of people, changing the information, or not changing it online, but requesting this updated ballot, printing it out, submitting it themselves, in hopes that the people that they're doing this from don't actually vote. Thus, you would never find out about that second paper ballot that would have the signatures and everything done. Is that possible that that's happening?
Remember, if it, the sophisticated idea that you're doing, they would have to do each one of those requests individually, first of all. Because, again, we have, we've built in some security features that would prevent it from being some sort of bot attack or something that would be, you know, massively been able to do as a electronic attack. And then and we are monitoring the system for activity that looks suspicious. So I would like to think that we would catch it there. But if they full blown, you know, falsified signatures and return them, I do believe that the signature check would catch those actors that have returned a ballot erroneously or fraudulently, and again, we would have the ability to go through and prosecute them. You know, because again, every single signature that doesn't match, we send a letter to the voter that the real voter that is registered in our system. That's a security measure as much as it is a second chance. So you know, these voters, even if they're low propensity voters, if they get an official letter from a government entity at the county that says your signature on your envelope doesn't match and we need you to fix this, they're going to call and let us know.
Just joining us, we're talking with Secretary of State Kim Wyman about some last-minute issues that pop up. And by the way, it seems like we have these conversations every single election time. The other issue that pops up a lot is that folks are getting two ballots, and usually there's a small spelling error of a name that gets sent in. I've had a few people out of King County, at least, send me photos saying that they got two ballots to the same address, and one of them looked like it actually had the same name, except one had like a middle initial. Obviously, you don't want people sending in both ballots. If they do, what does that mean?
Well, you know, my guess is that would be something that happened probably when they were renewing their driver's license or getting their driver's license, and that's where you had the two records. This is something that we should be checking for and trying to catch, but, you know, we aren't perfect, so I know that some of these could slip through out of, you know, nearly 5 million records that you could have one or two that are amiss. A voter can only vote once, even if they are issued more than one ballot. We would hope that when a voter discovers that they have two records that are different, but they are both issued to them, that they would contact county election officials and let us know. But certainly if they didn't, and if they went ahead and voted those, and we do find it, then we're going to turn it over to law enforcement, and that would be voting more than once, which is a felony.
Yeah, and so when in doubt, just call whatever county elections office you belong to, ask those questions there. That's what I've been telling some people. They've been doing that. And remember, you're only allowed to vote once. Don't vote twice. And the idea that you might be able to vote twice and choose not to is part of the reason why we don't have the fraud that a lot of people say. But if you do vote twice, they know about it on the back end. They're going to get that. Then they turn it over. It has happened in the past. Doesn't happen all that often, but in the last few years, it definitely has happened. I believe it was a little over 200 times. At least there were suspected cases of potential fraud during the 2016 and 2018 election. And I believe that was just King County, but maybe across the state. You guys turn it in, and then it's up to law enforcement to pursue.
Yeah, and it was across the state. It was 142 of those happened in 2018, and actually we're getting ready to turn those over to the FBI for investigation. The counties have had a chance to do the research on them and work with their prosecutors. And if they're not going to prosecute, then we're going to turn those federal election double voting ballots over to the FBI.
Well, there you go. Secretary of State Kim Wyman, who, by the way, is up for re-election. We fully, fully, fully endorse Kim Wyman, as you should vote for her 100%. Doesn't matter, but only do it once. Secretary Wyman, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, the craziest story I think I've seen in all of 2020. And that's saying a lot. We're going to get into it when we come back. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. I have what is easily the craziest story of the year. And I understand that it's 2020, things are insane, and we expect that we'll even have more insanity over the course of the next couple months. I'm telling you, I have the craziest story, not even just of 2020. The craziest story, period. We've got insane details coming out of Anchorage, Alaska. And when I say insane, I mean insane. It involves allegations of pedophilia, leaked nude photos, death threats, anti-Semitism, and politics. Mayor Ethan Berkowitz, the mayor of Anchorage, he resigned last week after an anchor, her name is Maria Athens, came out and claimed that he posted nude photos of himself to a, quote, underage website. I don't know if that means like HelloKitty.com or if it means a website with underage pornography on it. He resigned. He said that didn't happen. When Maria Athens is accusing me of it, never happened. However, he says he had a messaging relationship with Maria Athens. They met on WhatsApp, or he slid into her DMs on WhatsApp. And they had a, in his view, quote, unacceptable personal conduct that has compromised my ability to perform my duties with the focus and trust that is required. Now, if that's all you knew, given the allegations of posting nude photos to an underage website, you would assume he's lying about the texting relationship and he actually is guilty of the nude photo stuff, right? Just based on what I just told you.
Yeah. Fair.
Right? And that, and I don't know if that's true. He says it's not true. However, let's talk about Maria Athens. Because she's crazy. She is legitimately crazy, in my humble opinion. Please don't sue. Based on a whole bunch of evidence. Exhibit number one, or exhibit A. I don't know what they do in court.
I think A.
A. She allegedly left this voicemail on his phone.
Ethan, it's Maria Athens from Fox ABC, CW, Newsnet, National Alaska. I just learned through my Emmy award-winning journalism, you're also a pedophile.
So just real quickly, when I make phone calls, I don't say, I learned through my, I mean, if I won an Emmy, I would say, my Emmy-winning journalism. That's not how it's done.
You don't need to flex like that in a voicemail?
No. And you could already kind of tell she got crazy voice, crazy person voice. Because there's something a little unhinged here.
Emmy award-winning journalism, you're also a pedophile in, like, little girls and children. And there's a website. I'm so exposing you. I'm going to get an Emmy. So you either turn yourself in, kill yourself, or do what you need to do. I will personally kill you and Mara Kimmel, my self, you Jewish piece of living f***ing
Just real quickly. Got to do the whole pointing out he's a Jew.
Yeah, she went down that road.
Like, is she going down that road? Because you got a lot of anger there.
Yeah, she didn't have to, but...
But she chose to.
She did.
Okay.
You have met your match, mother... You
oh
have
God.
Met your mother... match. I can't believe I am such a good person and thought...
That's my favorite part.
I can't believe I am such a good person and an Emmy winner who hates Jews. But other than that, great person.
I loved you. I hate. I don't even hate you. I will pray for your Zionist ass.
Zionist? She's just doubling down because that's really how you know she's an anti-Semite.
You piece of loser.
Oh my
gosh. I'm putting this on the news tonight.
Nope.
Bye. Have a great Friday, you mother.
Imagine getting that voicemail. Oh my gosh.
The best thing I can think of is how Apple does like the transcriptions and it just reading that before you even hit play on it.
Imagine getting into the office and you're asking your secretary, did I get any calls? She just turns to you and say, you're going to want to listen to this one in your office. But she said that she was going to do this on the news. In fact, she created a Facebook promo that she posted online.
Hello there, Maria Athens from Fox, ABC, CW, News at National Alaska. Breaking news, according to reliable sources, Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz has his male genitalia posted on an underage girl's website. Coming up tonight, Fox 4 News at 9, ABC News at 10, CW News at 12:30, okay. And at NewsNet National for sure we'll cover this. You heard it here first.
Oh my gosh. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen, except it never made it to air. You see, the general manager of the station, who is also her boyfriend.
Ooh, ouch.
Said to her, you're not airing this. We can't do it. They got into some kind of argument while they were having this conversation in the car. He pulls over, kicks her out of the car, and says, presumably along with breaking up with her, you are never allowed back into the station again. She went back to the station, to which she then got into another kind of altercation with him, allegedly attacking him. Cops end up getting called. Here is a blogger, Susan Downing, talking with Inside Edition.
She got into an argument with the general manager, who also happens to be her fiancé. She wanted to go forward with the story. He didn't want to go forward with the story. They became engaged in a physical altercation. Police were called, and then she was hauled away.
CBS says she was placed in full restraints after she tried to kick out the back window of the police cruiser with her high heels. She was charged with assault, criminal mischief, and disorderly conduct, and released after posting bail. Anchorage police and the FBI investigated the allegations and said there's no evidence of any lawbreaking on behalf of the mayor. And yet he still resigned. What's in those texts?
It's got to be bad if he resigned.
She crazy, right?
100%. She tried kicking out the back window of a police cruiser.
That's the least crazy thing she did,
but that's
allegedly.
That solidifies crazy.
That's the one that solidifies crazy, not the Zionism stuff?
Well, that obviously solidifies it, but I mean, that's like the lowest one is like, okay, she tried kicking out the back window on a police cruiser. That's crazy. Now all the other stuff is just like, yeah, that's obviously crazy.
I've never enjoyed a story so much than I did this, and I listened to that voicemail, I'm not lying, 47 times in a row.
I made everybody in my house who works from home listen to that voicemail.
What did they say?
They said, oh my God, you're going to air this?
It is insane.
They said, well, I'm going to censor everything first.
Yeah. Unreal. By the way, I guess this is a good segment to point this out. Every once in a while, I get threats coming into either the station or my Twitter feed, Facebook. Facebook was the latest one. And this was more direct than normal. So my weekend was calling cops and having reports taken. A guy named Dustin, don't know if it's real name, although again, if you're going to make threats and you do it on Facebook, you're making it a little bit easier for people to track you down. Hey, you little B-word, if I see you in real life, I'ma F you up, you traitorous homosexual Jew.
Okay, pretty direct.
Pretty direct, huh?
Yeah, that's a good reason to call the cops.
Traitorous homosexual Jew. I'm definitely two of those. Which two? People who listen to the show know. It's not traitorous. Who says homosexual anymore?
I don't know. Seems like he's been watching like 04 South Park episodes.
I read this and I was trying to figure out, is this a crazy dude on the left or the right? Then I went to his Facebook page and apparently he is a poet. He's on the left. Show on AM 770, KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Most of you, if not all of you, have your ballots. You are ready to vote, but you're looking at one particular race with some renewed interest. Dave Larson is a federal way judge. He's a former trial lawyer who hopes to bring some much needed change to the Washington State Supreme Court. An issue that a lot of people are talking about right now is the Supreme Court's decision to overturn the 53% of voters who said yes to $30 car tap fees. Joining me on the line to discuss how he would generally view these kinds of issues is Judge Dave Larson. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
What was your take on the Supreme Court's decision to overturn 976? Was it the right one?
No. It wasn't. I would have been in the dissent. There were some things that weren't mentioned. For instance, that if something's going to be unconstitutional, it has to be shown to be unconstitutional beyond a reasonable doubt. That was made clear in the 2003 decision on I-776, which is similar to 976. It's an example of how when the court decisions are made and people rely on those and go out and do something, and then if the playing field's moved, it makes it much more difficult to come up with an initiative. But in this case, they used the dissent from the 2003 case, the losing side, to justify the winning side today without overruling that 2003 case. So it basically was some gymnastics to declare 976 unconstitutional when it should have been declared this constitutional, just like 776 was.
Yeah, and what's curious to me, you know, going over the two different issues that the Supreme Court took with 976. Number one was that the ballot title was confusing. A ballot title that was selected by the Attorney General. Number one, to be fair to the Attorney General's office, I didn't find it confusing at all. But number two, if the Attorney General's office is in charge of ballot titles, should the initiative sponsor be held responsible for it?
Well, I don't know how you hold them responsible, but it's looking for a way to overturn it, and it was clear, and it's where the justices are replacing their judgment for the judgment of the voters in terms of what's clear and not clear. 47% thought it was clear they should vote no, and 53% thought it was clear they should vote yes. And to second guess the voters is not what a court's supposed to do.
How much would you generally?
Justice Mattson, oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just to say. So, generally speaking, how much do you weigh the will of the people in cases where an initiative is either sort of towing the line, where you can make a technical argument that maybe something is unconstitutional versus something that is just patently unconstitutional? Where, in your view, does the voters' will come into your decision?
Well, when you're overlaying the Constitution, if that's what you're looking at, is it constitutional? There should be no difference between a bill that passes the legislature and an initiative in terms of how it's analyzed. It's either constitutional or it's not. You look for ways not to declare something unconstitutional first. And only when it's shown, like I said, beyond a reasonable doubt that it's unconstitutional, that you then declare it unconstitutional. So the same test should apply. And so the question is, when bills are coming out of legislature, when initiatives are passed by folks maybe that are considered on the other side of the aisle, are they going to be treated the same as 976 was? And that's the issue.
Yeah.
And a lot of, there's a perception that they aren't treated the same right now.
If you're just joining me, I'm talking with Judge Dave Larson. He is a Federal Way Municipal Court judge. He's running for Supreme Court position number 3. We sure hope that you support Dave Larson as you're looking and trying to decide how you're going to vote on judges. Most of the time, Judge Larson folks don't necessarily know any of the background. I assume the decision on 976 puts a pretty significant spotlight on what should always be deemed an incredibly important race, correct?
Yes. I think when there isn't diversity of thought anywhere, I don't care if it's in a legislative body or in a committee or the court, you end up having decisions that are made that are head-scratchers sometimes. And this decision is a head-scratcher. And the thing is that's why you want to have as many different viewpoints at the table as possible. And there isn't that viewpoint that I will bring to the court on the bench right now. And again, I don't consider myself conservative liberal, but when it comes to applying the Constitution the way it's written and being very strict about that, there isn't a voice like that right now.
Yeah, and I mean, you and con- you can correct me if I'm wrong. You just simply consider yourself nonpartisan, which is exactly what we want out of all of our judges. And I don't think a reasonable person can look at a whole host of decisions coming from this current Supreme Court, regardless of whether or not we're talking about your opponent in Raquel Montoya Lewis or anybody else. They've become pretty partisan, or at least they've made it really easy to point out that they're partisan.
I think that's the perception the public has, and I think that needs to change. The public trust and confidence in the judiciary belongs to everybody, regardless of your political persuasion, your gender, any traits that you have. It belongs. It belongs to everybody, and right now it only belongs to a select few.
So you're in the last 18 days, 17 days of this election. What is the pitch to the voters that you haven't yet reached?
Well, the essentially, when we're looking at this particular race, you're looking at some of the things my opponent has done. She has voted to terminate a program intended to help the poor and moderate means people to get through a divorce. Decided a case against nurses that on a technicality that is just a complete and unjust outcome. And then she voted to release, was one in the sent to vote to release prisoners earlier in the year. And you look at the record, and there's a different perspective that I have that I think I can bring to the court that doesn't exist now, and that would be a better perspective.
What's the goal, or excuse me, what's the plan in getting in front of the voters right now? These are races that, generally speaking, don't elicit a whole lot of media coverage. Obviously, you're doing the show, which we certainly appreciate, and we're going to do what we can to get the message out. But generally speaking, media doesn't pick up on these races, even though they're important,
right?
And there's generally not a lot of spending going on advertising.
Well, I just got back from a 32-stop tour of Eastern Washington. Went to every Eastern Washington county except Douglas, Chelan, and Okanagan. Met with some great folks. Got media coverage there. Outreach to people, reaching real people. Facebook, the word of mouth. I mean, there's not a lot of money in these races, and so you have to rely on word of mouth and the intent of this tour was to generate some energy for the people that support me, but it ended up generating more energy for me than anything. I'm just so committed now to win this race, and so it's just has to happen. I mean, we're on a precipice, and we have to.
I'm with you. This literally has to happen. This is the stakes are not overstated when I say a lot is on the line. Now, obviously, we'd like more of you folks, people who are nonpartisan, on the Supreme Court, but we'll take one at this point. And hopefully you'll set a good example for the races moving forward. Dave Larson, again, is the judge who is running for state Supreme Court. His website is Larson4WA, LarsonFORWA.com. Go there now to learn not just more about Judge Larson, but how you can contribute to his campaign, how you can help spread word of mouth so people are actually voting on this. People always ask the question who people should vote for on these judge races. They are not doing the research themselves, so it's important for you to step up and tell your friends and family members and coworkers why this is so important and why you're voting for Dave Larson as he is running for state Supreme Court. Judge Larson, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks. And again, Larson4WA. Larson is spelled LARSON. FORWA.com. That does it for the Jason Rancher. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro.